probably not that important.
Mr. Chairperson, the conference is being recorded. I'll be leaving the conference. Have a nice day.
Okay.
Thanks, Ready Talk God.
I guess, yes.
Did
I guess we're
being
recorded,
your names?
So we can go ahead then.
Did you all have to say your names when you joined the call this time as well?
Yeah.
I did.
That's new, isn't it?
But it didn't announce the name when people came on, did it?
No, it didn't announce
it. No.
So then what's the purpose of recording your name?
I don't know. They have records,
anyway.
I guess, of who's on.
Oh, I guess. All right, anyway, should we turn it over to Michelle?
Yeah, let's go.
Sure. Well, I think what would probably be helpful is if we can look at the abstract for the ICUTS conference. So if you guys have that available to open up, that'd be great. Otherwise, I can read it to you. And also to look at the particular session that we're in. The session is called Assessing Statistical Reasoning and Statistical Thinking. And in the session abstract, which is organized by Bob and Joan, they say that what the session includes presentations by researchers who report on assessment methods that are diagnostic in nature, such that they provide information on the nature of student understanding and misunderstanding of important statistical concepts, aspects of reasoning that are productive or deficient, or the nature of the statistical thinking. And then they go on to say that assessment, it could be formal instruments developed and tested with students whose psychometric qualities have been examined, or might be more qualitative in nature, such as open-ended questions or probes that are analyzed using scoring rubrics or other qualitative methods. So we're definitely in the other qualitative methods category here. But the entire session is really focusing on assessment. So when I was working on the outline, I realized, it's important that I say what it is that we're trying to assess and how much time we spent trying to spell out these different concepts. But I'm also going to have to spend time talking about, how we are developing the items and the kinds of analyses that we're beginning to do, even if it's very, very preliminary, just because that's what the session is focusing on. If we go back to our abstract, you guys have it open in front of you?
Yes.
Yep.
Okay. Basically, we say here that the goals were look at the literature and on the literature both on sampling distributions and pre-req concepts, and then we say develop an assessment tool that we can use in a timely fashion to provide instructors with feedback, and develop new and modify existing assessment items to study the relationship between comprehension of sampling distributions and mastery of each prerequisite area. And then I say open-ended questions were refined for a pilot study, and we share our experiences in developing items. So when I started to do an outline of this, my idea was to start out with kind of framing the problem, talking about, sampling distributions, how they're so key to understanding inference, how it's a difficult concept in the intro class, talk a little bit about the Chance Delma Garfield chapter 13 that inspired us to get going, and then kind of go through a little bit the process that one of the goals is that we didn't want to just see whether or not, we could come up with the concepts in detail, but that we actually want to develop an assessment tool that can give quick and timely feedback, because that's part of our goal, is not just probing open-ended questions long-term, but actually an online tool that people can use relatively quickly along the lines of artists and things like that. Do you guys agree with that? Is that one of the goals that we're going to? I'm going to say that if that's not quite true.
No, I think that's the next goal.
Yeah, I agree.
We're heading with our first, so that's the goal of the talk, right?
Yeah, well, that's the goal of our research eventually, is to get there. And then kind of talk about the process that we've been undergoing to try and get there. Talk about how, give a little bit only a tiny bit of the lit review on the different concepts, and then I thought I'd present the table that we've been working on recently for each prerequisite concept, what are the different sub-concepts that people need to get. And then what I'd like to do after that is then bring up a few assessment items that directly address some of those sub-concepts, like the ones about distinguishing between the distribution of a single sample and the distribution of and the sampling distribution, where you talk about the difference in the elements. One is a single data point, the other one is the mean of a sample. And kind of talk about how we use that question to test this particular concept. Then after that, do that with like three or four, and then say that, in fact, we discovered when we were going through the process that we didn't have enough questions for each of these particular concepts, and that we had a very difficult time tearing apart variability from distribution, from sampling. And so we went back and further refined these ideas of the prerequisite concepts, and that we're now in the stage of creating more questions. Is that sort of where we are in the research as far as you're concerned?
I think that we also need to do a little bit of work about framing this in the context of all the other research that's out there.
Mm-hmm.
And in my mind, it's really bringing those pieces of together into one combined framework leading towards assessing, you know, understanding of sampling distribution and the prerequisite areas. So I think, one, it's bringing it all together, and two, it's also developing the assessment tool to really figure out what's the prerequisite knowledge for sampling distributions.
Okay.
Is everyone on board with that?
Yes, I am.
When we did this lit review of the different prereqs, then we tried to really focus on, well, which are the parts of these concepts that are important for sampling distribution.
Right, and what we've also done is compare what's written among the categories, between the categories, I should say, and make sure that there's not overlap there, and that it's really clear which aspects things correspond to. I mean, because otherwise it's just reporting what someone else said about variation and what someone else said about distributional thinking, and it's not clear what we're adding.
Right, I think we've talked a lot about that, how our novel edition is the synthesis of...
I'm on the phone. I don't have it here. I have to get that tomorrow. This is dope. Sorry. Okay, I'm back. Tisha? Hello?
Yeah, no, I'm finished. I was just saying, you know, reiterating Michael's thought that what makes our research unique and new is that we're synthesizing things from other sources and drawing it all together to create this one assessment item, or tool, not item.
Okay. Now, do you think that I should do a very brief section at the end where we report the kinds of findings when Michael had done the analysis of the test data that we already had? It showed you a little bit of promise, stating them with all of the caveats that it's not a representative sample, that we grouped them, but the questions that we thought went together, because we didn't do a cluster analysis or anything, right? We said these are variability questions, these are sampling questions. Is that right, Michael? Am I right on that?
We did not do any kind of factor analysis.
Okay, so this is looking at the results of the questions that we designed for testing variability, for testing distribution, for testing sampling and sampling distribution. We did see some promising preliminary results that there appears to be a relationship between how they perform on the prereq and how they perform on the sampling distributions. But, you know, this is by no means a thorough study, just sort of a promising first result. Do you think I should do that?
Is it worth it to do any psychometrics, like really brief, like Cronbach alpha or whatever, you know, on the measures that we have, and you know, based on what we find, either report it as tentative or say, you know, it's irrelevant if the numbers are so horrible, you know, because it is just preliminary?
Well,
is it worth it to calculate those?
The question I have is that is the data that we have, you know, sufficiently, let's say, valid? What is the population that we're talking about here? Or does it not matter when you're doing that kind of Cronbach alpha? I don't really know much about the psychometric test.
I think the psychometrics are dependent to the sample or the population that you're testing it on.
Okay.
Right. That's an important consideration. Although we do have some information on who took the fifth exam, and it's not far off from our target, I suppose. Most of them were students.
Well, the biggest issue is that it's self-selected into the group, right?
That's true. Yeah.
But I mean, I think that the whole point is that this is just a preliminary look to help us start to refine the instrument.
Right.
You know, but if we find that we're getting even, you know, decent psychometric properties, I think that adds to the credibility if you're going to put up, you know, an analysis of you know, which ones are correlated with sampling distributions.
Okay. And what does it measure? What does that Cronbach alpha measure?
Correlations among the items, essentially.
So basically the items that we've determined to be sampling distributions, for example, it basically measures whether they, in very loose terms, hang together. You know, if someone's getting, you know, if people typically get three of them right, but the people who get those right always get the next one wrong, then maybe those aren't measuring similar things. Is that a reasonable statement of that, Dale? You're probably most familiar with these.
Yeah, I mean, essentially, it's based on inter-item correlations for a set of items, and it also is the more items you have, generally, the higher the Cronbach alpha will be. It's intended to be a measure of how well the scale will essentially correlate with itself. That is, it's an internal consistency measure. So just a couple of comments on that. One way to get Cronbach alpha really high is you ask the same question several times. So a risk is that one can have a very narrow concept with a very high reliability. But as one's taking on a broader concept, it's likely that the reliability goes down.
So it's a measure, the Cronbach alpha is a measure of reliability, but like internal consistency reliability.
Right. Yeah, reliability is sometimes a misleading term because there's reliability across people, across time, across different raters, and this is just simply across items, how highly correlated different items are. So it's an internal consistency reliability.
But given that we have, you know, only a few items that are actually all dichotomous, at least the way I looked at them, did they get it right or not?
Yeah, it's going to be somewhat limited for sure.
Yeah. I mean, should we just say, you know, we're not even to the point where we can start evaluating psychometrics, we're just looking for interesting things? I mean, what do you think people's response to that would be?
Well, it's pretty easy to just calculate the correlations. I mean, you've done that already for the pilot data that we had. And I think what Michelle was saying is that it's encouraging. These things are correlated. Of course, what it doesn't address at all is the discriminant correlation. That is, how separate are the different domains that we're testing?
Mm-hmm.
Let me ask you something. Is it something that's fairly easy to calculate, or would this take a lot of time to do this?
Yeah, SPSS has a routine called reliability, and it calculates Cronbach alpha.
Because if it's something that's not terribly difficult, perhaps we can do it. And
yeah,
right. So just say, you know, we've tried this. Although we realize that, you know, it's a very small sample, we don't have a lot of repetitive items testing the exact same thing. It's just the first initial feel for how the data is looking and panning out. So at least we can give it the impression that, okay, we know what we need to do for this. we're not quite there yet, but we're moving in that direction.
I think that makes sense.
Okay, now the next question is somebody willing to do it? And because then if I'm going to put it in, what I'll need to do is get the results, but also, you know, I need a little bit of time to actually understand what the heck I'm going to be talking about. It's one thing to do it, but I'll have to look it up a little bit and be able to, you know, say something reasonably coherent about it.
I'm bringing up that. Stop right now and see if I can do it really quickly.
Okay. Okay, let me ask you something else. When we began this process and we all chose questions for the various different topics, we then kind of talked about them for a while. Most of them are open-ended. We use the open-ended to get some initial feedback that when Tisha and I that are in class tests. And then the step after that, what we were supposed to do was to turn them into multiple choice questions. Now, we've done that with some, and with others we haven't done it yet. So I'm wondering if we're going to be talking about that part of the goal of this eventual assessment tool is to get quick feedback. What's our stance in making our final assessment tool just multiple choice, or is it going to be multiple choice and some open-ended? You know, do we have a direction that we intend to go on that? Because right now, if you go to the WISE website, we have kind of a bit of both.
I guess ideally, to me, so if I'm a teacher of statistics and I'm going to use this tool that someone else has developed, if I need it to be quick and easy, I would like to have something that I can do that's just multiple choice, like, you know, the chaos test right now. But I would also like to be able to say to my students, okay, here's, you know, if I have more time, here's a multiple choice question, justify your reasoning, so they have to do both. So I guess for me, I'd like to see that we could have an option of doing it with just multiple choice, true, false, whatever it may be, but also always leave it open for students to have to explain more if an instructor wanted them to do that.
I'm sorry, your voice is sort of coming and going at the end there. Would you mind just repeating the last, like, sentence or two?
Is this better? I don't know if it's my phone or... Because I can hear an echo myself, too.
No, that's better. Now I can hear you better.
I'm on speakerphone. I'm going to turn myself on mute, see if that helps.
Okay. Just that... Again, if I'm using this tool as a teacher, that I would like for an option just to have things multiple choice, quick and easy. But sometimes I have a week where I have a little more time. I'll give my students a multiple choice question, but then make them explain why they chose what they did. So a teacher could still get more out of a multiple choice question if they chose to, but we'd also be giving them an out, I guess, if they just want something quick.
Yeah. Well, also because one of the things that I would tend to agree with you, and one of the things that I found a little bit frustrating when I was going through it a while back to print out what all of our current questions were, was that you can't go to the next page without answering, giving your reasoning, which is, I think, you know, which we did on purpose because we wanted them to have to put their reasoning. But I think that's why we got so many answers that were like, you know, X or nonsense stuff, just so people could get to the next page. So I would tend to agree that long term we're looking to head towards multiple choice, but that we're using the responses from these open ended to develop good multiple choice options. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I think that's a good summary.
It seems to me that we've got a couple of different applications for what we're doing here, which are not totally consistent. That is, if we're looking for something that can be done very quickly, sort of in the heat of battle as you're explaining something, or if you're doing an online instruction and you want to know, do people get it or not, you don't have time to give a full psychometrically established, you know, 10-item, 20-item scale. Essentially, you'll pick a particular diagnostic item, one item, even though it's fallible and it's not perfect, it's fast and it will be helpful. Open-ended questions are also very useful, but that's probably more useful in the classroom setting where the teacher can pose the question and organize a discussion around it. And I think what we're doing allows us to go both directions. That is, we've got the motivating kind of questions, the issues, and then we have specific questions that could be used for that quick diagnostic on a particular point. But the goal then of making a scale, the psychometric revalid scale of all of the variables, all the issues that are involved in understanding sampling distributions, that's somewhat separable, I think. I mean, that's also an important goal, but and I think in the process of getting there, we will have developed items and questions that will be very useful for these other purposes along the way. I don't know if that complicates things, but that's kind of how I'm thinking of it.
So I guess what I'm looking to do here is to just really define. You know, you just said there we've got the two kind of slightly different things, and trying to define what is it that we want to do. Are we creating this assessment item, this assessment tool, to help teachers in the classroom identify whether students are deficient, and also to help researchers see how these prerequisites really pan out in terms of being prerequisites to sampling distributions? It kind of have a double purpose. And how are we going to try and sell this to the statistics education world at large, let's say, as something that we'd like them to use? We'd like them to use it because it helps them as teachers. We'd like to use it because it helps us in our research. Trying to think in terms of how to sell the use of this eventual tool. I teach in a business school. You gotta sell.
Right. Well, it does seem like two different purposes. What I found most useful myself is, as we've been thinking these things through, is being more thoughtful about what questions one poses for students to make sure that they are the kinds of things that do get at the conceptual issues. But that's separate from having the overall scale or setting it up for research where we can answer questions like what are the important prerequisites for understanding sampling distributions. They're spin-offs, from what we're doing that are very helpful for instruction along the way, I think. Raising the awareness of what are some of the issues that are involved here and what kind of questions can you use to get at them. The questions that we're dealing with, that we're finding, I think, are very useful. And I would guess a lot of people teaching statistics haven't come across those or haven't thought about it in this way. And so we're organizing that information, I think, in a useful way. But so the assessment is at two levels. One is that right to the point, specific little issues that you're teaching at the time, and then the broader issue of what do you need to know about the sampling distribution or about the prerequisites to understand the sampling distribution? How do you test whether people understand it sufficiently, adequately?
Okay.
But the full scale isn't going to be used in the classroom on the fly, I don't think. But there's still a lot of value for the classroom. Maybe that idea of what's the value for the classroom instructor of what we're doing is helpful to think about.
Mm-hmm. Okay, what's the value for the classroom instructor and what's the value for the statistics education research body?
Right, yeah. And I think the value for the instructor is this organization we're putting on it is bringing out these issues, bringing out these concepts that are important, and items that can assess that, individual items that can be very useful. I mean, just looking at what I sort of personally got from entering this whole domain is finding those items. I find that very... stimulate.
Do you guys want to switch now for a minute just to look at some of the questions, because it's sort of related, some of the questions that came out of the Chance and Shaughnessy book? Can we take a minute?
I have Cronbach Alpha for you if you want.
Oh.
Yes?
I won't know what it means, but... what's the range of values that Cronbach Alpha can go from?
So it's like a correlation coefficient, right?
Yeah, 0 to 1. Can't be over... Okay. Well, actually, you can, yeah, if you screw things up.
Yeah.
Shouldn't go negative.
One thing you watch for is really risky is if you have reverse-coded items and you forget to reverse them, you can really screw things up. But anyway, what did you find, Michael?
So we have the 5 different measures. So we have that few questions on histograms that have a Cronbach alpha of 0.67. Which is not bad, right?
So,
yeah, how many items are there on that?
3 items.
Okay.
3 dichotomous items.
What are the questions on histograms? Is that distributional? Is that the standard deviation? Is the variability one?
Question 1, question 3, and question 4. That's all I see here. We can actually go look at them if you want.
I've got the printout of the question, so let me just find it. Question 3 and question, they're all about reading a histogram. Okay.
Yeah, so I've categorized them into those categories.
Okay.
So the histogram one's 0.67, which means they hang together. You know, they really might be estimating the same understanding. Students
right.
who get one right.
Some are you aim for reliability of, say, 0.7 is the rule of thumb, sort of like alpha 0.05, but the context is important. That is, if you're designing a scale to be used just for research, quick and dirty, reliability in the range of 0.6, 0.7 is probably okay. If you're designing a scale for assigning grades or for life-altering decisions like SAT scores or something, you'd insist on reliability above 0.9. But 0.7 is, that's encouraging with 3 items. You also get higher reliability with more items in general.
With 3 items that are dichotomous, too.
Yeah, that's right. So they're very sparse items. So
0.67
is quite good, I would think, with 3 items.
And it's the best one.
Can I ask you one thing, Michael? Why isn't question 2 in there? Because question 1, 2, 3, and 4 are all about the histogram.
I have to... I don't know.
Okay.
I mean, I don't know why that choice was made. But according to the code that I had to create that histogram, it was just question 1, question 3, and question 4.
Okay.
So that's a good question. I mean, we have to go back and look at this.
Okay.
Although my answer could be, because it gives us good results, so come on.
Question 1 is, what do the numbers on the horizontal axis represent? And question 2 is, what do the numbers on the vertical axis represent? And then question 3 is, how many people have a score greater than 4? And question 4 is, how many people took the test and have a score represented in the graph?
Okay. So those questions have an alpha of 0.67. The sampling questions, which is 11, 12, 13, and 14, have an alpha of 0.35, so not so great.
But that was also the one that we found wasn't really well correlated with the sampling distribution.
Well, this is not sampling distribution. This is sampling.
Right. But I remember that when you did the previous analysis, and you found that there was a correlation between how people did on histograms and sampling distributions, variability sampling distributions, distributional but not really with sampling.
Variability, we only have 2 items, question 5 and question 6, and it's got a 0.27 alpha.
Okay.
So, not so great.
Aren't they very similar questions, too?
Yeah.
I know. Okay.
Yep. Distributional thinking, questions 7, 8, 9, and 10. Cronbach alpha, 0.36. And sampling distribution, which is really the crux of what we're getting at, questions 15, 16, 17, 18, 0.13.
Okay.
Now, some of that's being due to question 16 looks to have a negative correlation with the others.
We should look at that to make sure we've got it coded right and all of that. But one comment on that, too, is when you are measuring some broad concept, there often are pieces of it that aren't that highly correlated with each other. And you can have great test-retest reliability even with a fairly low Cronbach alpha or even correlations with other things. It just means that your items are measuring different, conceptually different things. You know,
which actually, when I go to look at question 16 is the one where we have two dot plots next to each other and say that one is 26 scores from a population and the other is part of a sampling distribution of mean scores for samples of size 3, and then asks you to say what are the two, you know, an item in one and an item in the other, are they the same thing or do they represent different things? So that question actually is testing the distinction between a single sample and a sampling distribution. What are the elements of each of those? Which is pretty different from what we're testing in 17-18, which is the ones where they have a population and have to see which of the graphs looks like a sampling distribution. So would that be what you're saying, Dale, is that since they're testing quite different things, those questions, it's not unusual that we have a very low?
Right. Yeah, you know, looking at this whole thing, I think we've made a lot more progress in finding items that are relevant, I mean, that are important. They're getting a concept that are probably important. And it also points out how difficult this will be to get a high reliability, get a good psychometrically sound measure of all of these things. This is not real encouraging, I suppose, for going down that road. But I think the items we have are still very useful for teachers.
And everything with coded is just right or wrong, right, Michael? There wasn't any...
These are all dichotomous.
Okay.
There's no such thing as gray.
Okay, microwave. Got it, or you didn't.
Okay. Wait. Yes. In the just looking at that made me think of going back to the questions from Beth Chance and Michael Shaughnessy. The question that we just looked at, question 16, exactly is one of the questions that they ask, the type of thing that they ask. Do you guys have that file open by any chance? The one I sent an email to you earlier today.
Is that question from the classroom?
Yes.
Okay.
Dale, did you get it? Because I sent it to you, too, and got an email back again saying that it was undelivered.
I didn't see it. I'm just looking now to see if it came in.
It would have come in just, 45 minutes ago. I sent it right before the call.
I can forward it, Dale.
Maybe Fisher or Michael, yes, you guys could just forward it to Dale. For some reason, Dale,
right
your email really doesn't like me.
Thanks. That's really strange. I don't know why I'm not getting email from you. Didn't get it.
So basically what I've done here is copied verbatim questions that they give that she suggests that should help provide teachers with insight into level of student understanding. And I think these are very similar to the kinds of things that we were trying to discuss when we were breaking down into our specific concepts. For example, the first one says, what are the elements of the sampling distribution and what are the elements of a sample? So, you know, each element in the sampling distribution is a sample statistic, be it a proportion or a mean, whereas the elements of a sample are individual elements from the population. And the questions after that, you know, how is the standard deviation of a single sample related to the standard deviation of the population? It should be about the same. And the next one, you know, as well, the standard deviation of the sampling distribution is smaller than the standard deviation of the population. So she basically put in question form the kinds of things that we put as these are things that students should know. But I found it helpful because I thought this could be a very good guide to creating more assessment items that get at each of these little parts. So Now they ask, how is the shape of a single sample related to the shape of the population? How is the shape of the sampling distribution related to the shape of the population distribution? Now those are all open-ended questions. They would all be very good in the classroom, but they could also be good guides for developing assessment items that basically ask the same question, but in a, you know, some kind of a multiple choice setting. I guess why I bring this up is it made me think the way she framed these questions I quite liked, and I thought, okay, if we can take kind of the elements that we have in our table now, as these are all the sub-concepts, and try and rephrase them in our minds as a question, so that which we can then turn into a specific item, I think that would help us get going on creating the items again.
Yeah, I think that's a good approach. Yeah, I'm not real optimistic about getting a big scale that's going to measure all of these things so well, but I think coming up with items like that will still be a very useful, productive, helpful task. Be a real contribution if we can for each of these concepts find good ways of stimulating discussion or assessing whether people understand that particular point.
And it reminds me, Michael, I don't know if you followed up on that further down the road, but remember when we were in Portugal and Larry Weldon held that session on developing assessment items and basically asking people, please send me assessment items. We'll try to put together a pool of good questions from which people can draw. And I think you had followed up, you know, maybe 6 months later and nobody had really done much with it yet. Have you ever talked to him again since then?
No, it totally fell by the wayside, but from my understanding is I think it's ICOTS. Ido Gall was at the meeting in D.C. the last couple of days, and he was saying that Larry is leading, I don't know if it's a session or some open-ended forum to really start gathering people's opinions on assessment items.
Okay.
I mean, I think that one of the challenges that, again, came up at this meeting in D.C. is that everybody has their own flavor of things. Mm-hmm. And so generating an assessment item for testing that really encompasses, you know, everybody's flavor of statistics is almost impossible.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even the wording you use. So, you know, in terms of, you know, the discussion from earlier about kind of is this a research instrument versus a teaching assessment tool, I'm not sure that, you know, it can be the latter. It can only provide someone the framework to expand it into that on their own.
Okay.
I don't know if I'm totally going in a different direction, but...
I think that's right. I think having some examples of questions will be helpful for people, even if they want to make their own adaptations to it. At least it will point the domains that they ought to be thinking about.
Right. You know, and again, hopefully the ultimate goal for us, you know, if I'm correct, is still, can we inform teaching to help identify what material is most important to focus on to get students to an understanding of sampling distributions, and then, you know, our next project 28 years from now will be, can we, you know, then take it to sampling, to a statistical inference?
Right. Well, just to add on to what you're saying is to identify what these things are, but also to have ways to be able to tell whether students, in fact, do understand the concept. You know, I think many instructors get fooled in terms of how well students understand these concepts. You know, you get the best students who are doing really well and speak up, and you think, okay, everybody's got it, and you never really ask these probing questions that get at the fundamental concepts, and the chaos test is really eye-opening in terms of how many gaps there are and what students actually know.
Right.
You know, so this
apparently they're redoing the chaos test.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think just bringing that whole idea more into the mainstream of statistics education would be a big contribution. You know, to have people confront the fact that their students, in fact, don't know how to read a histogram.
Right. Well, but even so, like, it's a fair question to ask. Like, what's, especially now in the age of reform, what is the goal of a statistics class? And, I mean, apparently Dennis Pearl has 91 outcomes that he wants students to know by the end of his class. And you look through them, and none of them are analysis or synthesis-level processing. It's all kind of basic regurgitation of can you, you know, calculate a mean, calculate a median, explain when one is used versus the other. But it's not like, you know, can you take a problem from the real world and use statistical thinking to make an informed decision? Isn't that kind of the goal of what we want students to be able to do? Yet we don't test them at that level.
Right.
And so how do you develop, and that's, I think, the impetus for improving the chaos tool, is that there's a lot of reform classes who are less procedurally based, who want to understand, like, the ideas of key values without the calculation of one.
The whole other question of who's going to be most successful in a workplace.
Right.
This also makes me think, another book that I just got from the National Council of Teachers of Mathematics is called Focus in High School Mathematics, Reasoning and Sense Making, which was also written by Shaughnessy Chance and a guy named Henry Crannendonk. So this is the one. They have focus issues for various different of the NCTM curriculum strands. This one is called Statistics and Probability, and they actually have a chart at the back that tells you exactly what they're expecting that 9th to 12th graders should be able to do in terms of statistics and probability. And very few of these are actually real, you know, mechanical. Some of them, the big ones are like formulate questions that can be addressed with data, collect, organize, and display relevant data to answer them. Select and use appropriate statistical methods to analyze data, develop and evaluate inferences and predictions based on data, and understand and apply basic concepts of probability. So even there, you know, we're talking about students who eventually should be coming out of high school already knowing that. And if they do, then the stats course at university level is going to be quite different as well. Did that come up a bit in the meeting in D.C. at all, that, you know, that the new standards for high school actually require a decent amount of statistics in the 9th through 12th grade?
Yeah, I mean, the idea came up that we need to be responsive to changes in the K-12 curriculum. But the specifics of, you know, I mean, we did declare that we were talking about undergraduate courses or, like, AP statistics classes. Now, if this is like a Common Core standard, then that should be taught to everyone, not just those taking AP statistics.
Right, which is what, according to NCTM, that's what they're declaring. Now, it could take a long, long time for that to be implemented, but
right. So no, we didn't. They didn't directly address that.
Okay.
Well, Michelle, are we giving you anything useful here, or do you have?
Yeah, yeah.
I feel better.
I just wanted to kind of make sure we're on the same page for, you know, what are the goals, where are we headed with this. So I'm going to put together, I'll probably finish it tomorrow because I need to get back to my PhD a little bit. I've been doing this for a couple of days. Put together a preliminary slide, and I'll send them out to you guys, and then I would really love to get your feedback in terms of, you know, what looks good, what you change, so that I can kind of get this together before then. And then perhaps, Tisha, that might be helpful for you for the
JSM.
JSM.
I think that would be wonderful.
Okay,
Michelle.
That sounds like a good plan.
Yeah, that's great.
So sorry, I took up the whole time on this on my agenda. Tisha, you had something you want to talk about? Michael,
yeah.
You had something too?
I didn't have anything to add. I was just commenting on conference.
Yeah.
On a meeting? Okay.
Yeah, we should set up our next meeting, too, at some point here. And Tisha, then, I guess we should. Let's talk about our next meeting just to get that out of the way.
Okay.
In case we get cut
you.
Off or something, we are set. How soon do you want to go again?
I would love to have one last meeting before I cut, just to make sure that it's kind of all together. I leave on July 11th for that. Would you guys be available, say, July 7th or 8th, something like that?
Fine for me.
Yeah, that works for me, too. Is it something with the second Thursday of the month now that we're not going to be able to have conference calls at a certain time?
Yeah, it's Tuesdays, first and third Tuesdays.
Okay, that's always a
Tuesday.
The 7th, I think, looks better for me. So if everyone's okay for both, I would prefer the 7th over the 8th.
Oh.
Okay. What time is good for you guys?
I'm open all day.
I'm open all day, too.
I'm open anytime except for the morning.
So this same time would, I'd say, 2 p.m. Eastern?
Okay.
Does that work?
Does this work for you, Michelle, first time?
Yep. It works for me.
Okay, I will send a note out and make sure it works and confirm it to everybody.
Okay. One other thing that we didn't get to as well, but we can perhaps do it next time, is the draft that you sent out Dale, with implications for teaching and research.
Just a couple things.
So maybe we can do that. Maybe we can talk about it next time. Thank you for doing that.
Okay, yeah, so by next time maybe we'll have an overall a draft of that paper. So.
I hope so.
Yeah.
So can I talk a little bit about things that I've run into the last few weeks?
Yeah.
So I didn't send anything out because I've actually ended up paring it down, and it's more in outline form than ever before. But the first thing that I did was to start to look at other formats for literature reviews in general, and I haven't really found a whole lot out there in target journals that we might have. The only one that I did see, it was a JSE article. Andy was actually the lead author, and I think that there were several grad students from the University of Minnesota, and they just did a literature review on what research suggests about teaching and learning stats at the college level. So I looked at that as sort of a framework, and one thing that I noticed in that one is that, I don't know how to say this, they were maybe a little bit more lax, like I think we would like to be, and it flew. They were published in JSE. Then I've seen other articles, I think it was one of the more recent issues of Surge, and I think that Bob had actually sent this article to us a year or two ago to give us a framework for something that says, okay, here's what we're doing now, and it's setting up our goals for the future. And what I took from that paper that I think might help us is this idea of separating. Like right now, if you look at the draft of our lit review, we go through sampling distributions, and we say everything that the literature tells us, and then here's our table. And then we go to variability, and here's the literature, and here's our table. What I am proposing we do is creating like a second section on just the literature review that goes through everything that we found, I guess. I have another comment about that in a little bit. But go through our literature in, say, a section number 2 and kind of leave out our tables at that point. And then I propose that we create a third section that says, okay, we've reviewed the literature. Here is our synthesis of the information, and here's what we say you have to understand about sampling distributions and all of the prerequisite concepts. To me, that maybe sets it up a little bit more to show that we're adding to this.
Mm-hmm.
And also, as I was reading our draft, sometimes I feel like our tables don't necessarily fit well where they were because we don't mention anything in the existing literature review about these components that we have all agreed on. And so I'm wondering if it does make a little more sense to make a third section. Can I get some feedback on that before I say what else I found?
Can you say that again? What does that third section entail?
The third section would mostly be like the information that's in our tables that we've worked on the last few weeks.
But the point would be that it's been our synthesis of all of this rather than necessarily a literature review per se.
Right, and the literature review guided us there in many ways.
Right.
But there are other things that came about from conversations we had with each other, not necessarily articles that we read. And I think that's getting lost a little bit in our current setup of the paper.
Because we all thought we had nothing to... So.
What was that, Michael?
Because we all thought we had nothing to say. So.
Right.
I think that's a really good point to make it really clear what the literature background is.
Yeah, I like the idea.
Right. Yeah, I do too. It reflects the reality of what we did.
So then, go ahead, Michelle.
No, I was just going to say, and for me as well, lots of times I go back and read stuff that Beth and Bob and Joan have done in the past, as Michael said in one of his early emails, and keep thinking, okay, well, what's our contribution here? What are we doing different? You know, we've been spending 2 years going over something that's already been done. Then I think, no, actually, you know, we really are trying to link all these things well together. And so I think it's a good idea to draw out definitely what's our contribution. And by making a separate section, it does put emphasis on that. So I like that idea.
And the other thing is, you know, as I read, and granted, it's a pretty bare-bones draft right now, what we had been working with, but when you get to our tables, all of a sudden, some of the things are just there with no mention of anything above in the literature, which is fine because it was what we suggested it be, but we don't say it. We just put it in the table, and I think that a separate discussion would be valuable. Another issue that I've encountered, so I started kind of doing this, and I looked at a few more literature reviews from... Dale, is that paper that you said you were just getting published in the Educational Research Review, is that... With your WISE group? Is that the journal?
We could send that to you.
That would be wonderful. But I was just going to... Was that the journal itself, the Educational Research Review, or was it something different?
No, Review of Educational Research.
Oh, okay.
Similar. Yeah, R-E-R, yeah.
Okay. So I found a few articles from, I guess it would be ERR, the Educational Research Review. And I don't know if it's just that typical... or if this is just difficult for this journal, or if this is something that maybe is good to do with lit reviews in general. I think last time we talked, we mentioned that Michael, you and I straight out said, well, we've never really written just a literature review.
Right.
One thing that I noticed them doing a lot in this journal is giving a very good description of how they conducted their literature review. They mentioned which search engines they used. They mentioned specifically here, you know, we did an exhaustive search of, they have Journal of Stat Ed, Surge, and Proceedings from ICOTS from certain years, and then they track things down. And I just kind of started thinking, you know, I don't know how careful I was with just my section on distributional thinking. So I went back through, and to be honest, in just distributional thinking, I found some papers that I didn't acknowledge before. I found some that were published in the last 6 months. You know, we started this stuff a couple years ago, and I hadn't been going back and looking for papers from 2009 and 2010. And I know that we want to get this done, but I also think I want to do it well. So I don't think it would hurt us to maybe all just make sure that in our own areas that we did do an exhaustive search. And especially picking up anything that might have been published in the last 6 to 12 months. And maybe all of you have been much better than I have, but like I said, I found an article yesterday that I totally missed on distributional thinking that had some valuable information in it. And so that's another thing that I'm going to try to do in this next week. And I'm happy to look at, you know, across the whole paper, but if anyone wanted to pipe in with sampling distributions or sampling or variability, I sure wouldn't mind the help.
No, I think that would be, for time efficiency, I think it would be good if each of us just did sort of a little search for the most recent articles on our area and see if there's anything particular that we should be adding. I think that's a good idea. Also, because if you give it to any reviewer that knows anything about it and you, there's you know, an article that was out 6 months ago that you don't cite, that doesn't look very good. I agree.
And then the last thing, I'm sorry for just throwing this all on you guys today, but the last thing that I've kind of been thinking about, in that literature review, I still think it's important for us to, of course, look at what other authors are identifying as key elements to understanding each of our concepts, maybe looking at some common misconceptions. And this is kind of a thought that I had this morning, and I got this because I don't even know where it is. I have papers all around me right now, but in one of the literature reviews that I think it was in the Surge article by Joan and Bob, maybe Andy was on that too, but they were just looking at existing tasks. And again, their project is very different from ours, but one thought that I had was, okay, in our literature review, is there any value looking not at necessarily our assessment items, but other existing tasks and assessments from our literature review? And then maybe, again, something new that we could contribute would be to identify the gaps or the holes in those existing assessment items. You know, once we put together our section that says this is what we're contributing and these are everything that a student should know about prereqs and sampling distributions. And then if we could say, okay, traditionally the assessment items that have been discussed in literature aren't identifying this one thing, so clearly there's a need for more work to be done. Or maybe we would want to talk about the fact that here's an assessment item that's typically used, but look, there's a lot of overlap. You know, this item, you don't know if the student can't understand variability or if they don't understand how to read histograms. There's some confounding there. So again, there's a need for better assessment items to kind of separate those components. Is there any value in a discussion like that, or is that maybe just something we want to have when we're developing questions in the future? I don't know if silence is a good thing.
No, I'm writing stuff down.
You want me to repeat my last stream of consciousness?
No, I think it's a valid point. I'm just trying to think back at the time when I remember one of the places I went was both to Bob's website where he had the pre and post test for sampling distributions, and then we went to Artist and I kind of did a filter of all questions having to do with variability.
Mm-hmm.
So there was a possibility to get quite a lot of questions on try to tear them apart by the different concepts. So yeah, there was a need for, there's a lot of questions that are out there, but they're not necessarily, as you say, it's hard to tell whether it's histogram versus variability, and they're also not all focused in relation to sampling distributions. Like there's certain things about variability that I don't think are that important for understanding sampling distributions.
Mm-hmm.
So we tried to get rid of those questions. The question is, how would we approach that in a paper?
And it might just be something that we keep track of for the future. Again, I'm just trying to take more of our literature review and put a spin on it that's fresh and new and that's ours and that clearly defines a need for the work that we're doing. But it doesn't have to be in this paper. Should I just go with writing the next few weeks with talking about just the key elements, maybe some misconceptions, and then just leave even existing assessment items out of it for now? And then if I think of something really cool that maybe I can try to write, I'll send it your way and see what you think.
Yeah, I think that's a good approach. You know, when there are these kind of open things probably when you see it more concretely, it helps us think more clearly about what we want to do.
Yeah, Michael, when you were doing the original research on sampling distributions and sampling, how did you go about it? What did you use?
It's very similar. I mean, I just worked through, you know, artists and identified the items in there that I thought satisfied it, and then I think that was really the focus of it. I'm trying to remember where I got that one. I think it was actually in, like, that chapter 13 is where I got the,
you know, the
population and identify which one represents the sample distribution thereof. Although they have, I was just looking at it recently, they have, you know, these really multimodal distributions.
Right.
Not a, like we, but it's based on that.
Okay.
Yeah, I did essentially the same thing. Looked through the artist pool of items and see what was most relevant. And then pulled some out of the other, out of the lit review too. But ended up throwing most of them away.
You know what is another good source that's probably worth looking at a little bit? Is under the NCTM website, they have a section called Illumination that has all kinds of, like, in-class activities and exercises. I'll try and do a search and see if there's anything on there related to sampling distributions. If I find something, I'll send you the link. Just so that our whole thing isn't from developing out of artists.
Right.
We don't have any
research
out there. But, Tisha, I think maybe we can look at that more when we get back to working more on developing the items.
Mm-hmm.
I'd say whatever you're able to do in terms of getting the paper in that kind of new organization that you mentioned would be fantastic.
Yeah.
Right.
And just to comment on one thing that earlier, I will say that I've definitely noticed that you were talking about JSC versus SIRG structures.
Mm-hmm.
JSC is definitely more lax.
Right.
So, you know, if that's our target, then I'm happy to follow that model.
I think that I found two literature reviews in JSC. And to be honest, one of them was a lot easier to write than ours because it was just looking at computer simulations and how they were applied to things like the p-distribution, sampling distributions, confidence intervals, etc. So theirs was pretty straightforward structurally. The one that Andy and I think other grad students wrote might be a little bit more applicable to what we're trying to do, which is synthesize.
Right.
I think we actually read that one. I have a memory of reading one by him about...
I think that they had us read it at the very beginning because it was just kind of an overview of what's going on in research and status.
Yeah. Yeah, but I have a memory that we read that before we even got to US Cuts.
I think it was one of them. And so that their article, they didn't specifically say, okay, here are the search engines that we used, and we made sure. But again, it was just a good reminder to me that maybe it would be a good idea for us to all just make sure that we've covered.
Mm-hmm.
It would be really embarrassing to miss something very big. And I don't think we have, except for my one that was new.
And the other thing that might be worthwhile that I've done in the past is kind of send it out to friendly reviewers before we submit it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so definitely send it back to Bob and Andy and say, what do you guys think of it?
Yeah.
And if there's anything glaring, you know, I would hope they would point it out.
Right. Okay, so I will keep working on that this next week.
Okay, and we'll each look and see if there's anything... any major new article in the section that we originally looked at for you.
That would be wonderful.
Sounds good.
All right, so we talk on July 7th then.
Right. unless anything unusual turns up, that would be the plan.
Mm-hmm. Great.
2 p.m. Eastern, right? Okay.
Yep, 2 p.m. Eastern.
Right, 2 p.m.
Eastern. That's great.
And I'm gonna be in Corsica from July 3rd to July 6th. So if you send me emails in those days and I don't answer, it's just because I'm not on email. So if there is a problem, I'll get back here early morning late night on the 6th. So don't worry if I don't answer you. I will be back.
Well, have fun.
Okay. Yeah. Have fun.
Yeah. Great. Have fun.
Thank you. Okay, we'll talk to you guys in 7. Thanks a lot. Thanks to the WISE team for sitting in on us.
Thank you. Have a good one.
Yep, where they all
I'm sure it was a thrill for y'all. Take care, everybody.
Okay.
Take care.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you. Please stand by.